Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Did you bring your thinking caps? Because it's time to put them on. Because the conversation starts now. Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Yes, you are back at the location. You are at the spot right here. The place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are super sharp, and the responses are never dull. And today, we're going to Wisconsin, okay, to visit with Deb Rossman. Me and Deb have a lot of synergies. And when I found this precious jewel, I knew that I had come across a winner. You know, all of us have experienced grief. Grief is not just the loss of a loved one. It could be the loss of your job, your relationship, your pet. Grief comes in many forms. It's not a systematic way of what you're going to feel. It's ebbs and flows. You're going to go in, you're going to go out, you're going to laugh, you're going to cry, you know, you're going to feel like you want to be with that person. Some people even, you know, get to the point of thinking of suicide. We're going to talk through that because that's not what we want to happen. We have our own individual journeys to live. We also have a synergy when it comes to poetry. Now, right, y'all know, especially if you've been on the show, I send you some of my poetry. I have been writing poetry since I figured out I had a reading challenge at about 7 years old, and I've been doing it ever since. So we're going to do that, and she's going to share an excerpt about that with us. We're going to talk about whole foods and a plant-based diet. I don't know if I'm feeling that. We can agree to disagree on that, okay? Because I want some fat. I want some cholesterol, but I do want my green vegetables. And so I want to understand what that is. So Brains, help me welcome her to the edge, Deb Rossman. How are you?
Oh, I'm over the moon excited to be in your heart space, to be sharing your heart space.
Thank you.
I felt my heart open up.
Thank you. Thank you. Because, you know, thank like you. I said in the green room, you know, I take this seriously. I don't do this with shit and giggles. There's a whole lot of things. You know, I've had a business since I was 5 years old. I've had my own business. And there's a lot of other things I could be doing. But I knew God gave me a calling. He said that you will be a communicator. And I was like, in what form, you know, is that in print? Will I preach? Will I, you know, what will that be? I had no idea that it'd be a podcast. And so I'm so glad to be here and to share this space with you. Tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Well, just hinging immediately off of what you mentioned with being very young and feeling almost a calling, if you will, that when I was 4.5 years old, my sister was in a horrific, it was in fact a fatal car/motorcycle accident, meaning the driver of the motorcycle that she was riding on was pitched over an embankment, snapped his neck on impact, and died immediately.
Wow.
My sister was pitched forward, and helmets were law, but they only do so much good when you hit the highway this way.
Wow.
And brain scrambled. And this was the summer of 1965, which just sounds like a great bebop tune, doesn't it? Summer of 65.
I know. Summer of 65.
I think it might be there. And she had just graduated high school. And she was, so I'm the result of dinner and dancing. I'm the bonus. I'm the bonus baby, almost 13 years younger than her. Anyway, long story short was, you know, that was a major event, of course, for our family. She did survive that, although she was in a coma 3 months, in and out of every therapy they had for 6 months to a year and so on. Eventually, when she was around age 68, so a bit older than I am now, cancer took her.
Mm.
And I personally believe it was that, you know, it's not prevalent in our family, you know, God bless, but, you know, her body was so, so compromised from that event when she was 18.
Wow.
And I remember walking the yard, walking, you know, even years later. I mean, there was so much going on at the time. I scarcely remember, but by the time I was 7 and 8 years old, I was a little bit of a philosopher. You know, I was a little baby philosopher. You know, I'm like walking around. I felt that I knew that a higher power had saved her. We actually found out, I mean, we are not the Catholic faith, but there are Catholics in the extended family. Turns out there was a whole convent praying for her.
Wow.
I learned all of this much later. And you know, I just think it was everything. You know, we can't point at one thing and say, oh, that's it. That's why. But by age 7 and 8, I actually had the audacity, April, to question God.
Wow.
We had a bona fide miracle in our family.
Let me stop you right there. Why do you say that you had the audacity? Do you think that we are not supposed to question him?
I do. Because I know I've come
down on me. He's probably saying, no, you're not supposed to question me.
Yeah, listen to her.
well, I question him all the time because we don't know everything. And this is a part of the process. Sometimes mm-hmm. I ask him to slow down the information that he's giving me because it comes quick.
Oh, it
does. And I feel that I have to, you know, I feel like I have to process it. Am I sometimes mature enough to process it? It's a certain level of maturity. Am I responsible enough for handling it? Am I strong enough to carry it? So, yeah, I question him. But I'm sorry, back to what you were saying, darling.
Well, the reason I chose the word audacity is because I felt like all the proof that was necessary had occurred when I was, you know, just knee-high to a grasshopper. And here I was, you know, a few years later, actually, you know, asking those big questions. Mm-hmm. And all I can tell you is at one point I started to sense answers. Didn't hear any voice. No one appeared. Nothing that dramatic. But I started to feel like I had a knowing of the answers to my child's questions. And that relationship.
But that's the big deal.
Yeah.
Brains, this is what I need you to understand. You want something, bing, bang, boom.
Mm-hmm.
You want something from your human experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how the metaphysical works.
Right.
It's very subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful.
Yep.
When you have that knowing, when you get that visit, when you hear that voice, it's undeniable.
Correct.
You know, it'll wake you up out of a sound sleep.
Yep.
It'll wake you up out of a coma. Okay. Or it will put you under.
Yep.
And so what you want to do is, you know, don't spend a lot of time questioning it. You know, you ask your question, you wait for your answer. When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. I'm a firm.
And I love that. I love that so much. And, but just hearkening back to me as a, you know, like eight years old or so, I'm walking around and I knew I wanted to be an orator. Mm. I was lucky I knew what the heck that word meant. But that's what I wanted.
That's right. You wanted to talk. You wanted to speak. How did mm-hmm. you get into the area of grief and grief recovery and working with people in that area?
It came about absolutely organically. I mentioned before that I'm the bonus baby. So everyone was considerably older than me in my immediate family. And at this point, it's me and my brother. We're last one standing. And along a couple with some other very, very close and dear family friends, et cetera. And so just going through the process on my own for myself, twofold actually. So when I lost that first wave of the, you know, what they just seemed so ancient, because when you're little, 30 years old seems ancient, but you know, these people were in their 80s and 90s respectively. And when they passed, I loved them dearly. And so I was sad, but I wasn't gutted. by it.
Right.
It does.
I always say I'm bent, but I'm not broken.
Correct. And at the time, one of the things that soothed me was poetry, specifically Cahil Gibran, A Tear and a Smile. That's a beautiful piece. I do not have it handy or committed to memory, but it's worth looking it up. And it is just an available PDF download online, that particular piece, because it's also part of a collective book with the same title, A Tear and a Smile by Cahil Gibran. And basically the essence of it is, I would not trade the sorrow for the joys of the multitude, that we need that yin yang.
Yeah, that duality.
Mm-hmm. And so that touched my heart as far back as I can remember. Fast forward, I'm in my early 40s, and the first significant gutted was my father passing. I was daddy's little girl, but also had just a beautiful rapport with my mom. It sounds cheesy, but, you know, best friend and things like that, but she really was and is, I'm going to mention, is still is. So I would write to process my own grief. Now, writing's just one of many, many, many ways.
Right.
I would write pieces, and then I started to write on behalf of other people. And I was doing a lot of theater at the time. That's actually my degree. and I would, communication arts and science, it translated to theater at Edgewood College. But that said, I would share pieces with theater friends as we'd get together after rehearsals and whatnot. And a friend of mine, Paula Coco, is that just an awesome name? She had been a stand-up comic, I think, in the 70s, maybe early 80s. And at the time in Connecticut, she was doing writing and directing and just comic gold. And I've lost track of her, but she had been working part-time for 20 some years at Border Books. And at one point I loved Border Books.
Why did they close bookstores?
I don't know. But and so she worked there, and she said to me, you know, you should really put your poems together in a collection, because she couldn't tell me how many times people would come and ask what they had on grieving, and they weren't looking for the clinical seven stages of grief.
Right.
They wanted something, as she indicated, like I was creating.
Wow.
Something that would soothe them, something maybe they could share with a relative, something that they could maybe read at the eulogy. And I pondered
that they always do at the eulogy, is they always usually read a poem. It's something about that sacred passage that really helps people.
Correct.
So you got a collection together and you wrote a book. You wrote not one, but two. Let's take a look at those.
Well, the second one is actually, it's the same, but this one is a journal.
Oh, okay.
This one is nice and thin. Look at how thin that is. So you can mail it off.
I have a thin one too. And I tell you, it's my most popular book. I've sold 22,000 copies. And it's about this big. But it's a great, and I say this with love, it's a great toilet read. You know, you're sitting there on the throne, and that's what people do instead of thumbing through the device.
Right.
You know, you read a magazine so that you can relax.
That's right.
It's poetry. So you are going to grace us.
Yes.
With one of your poems. Give us a little introduction to it and tell us a little bit about it before you read it.
Well, interestingly, I want to bounce off of you. So one of them is becoming somewhat my signature piece, because it sums up my philosophy, and it's simply entitled "I Am Not Gone," and it's a lovely, beautiful piece, easy to get to on my YouTube channel. It's the first one I recite, and I'm working my way through my own book, recording the various pieces. But the other one is very, I hate to say it, but somewhat timely, because it's entitled Blink. So that one for all the horrible school shootings, natural disasters, things like that, where just in that second, your landscape changes forever. And last but not least, and maybe the one that I was kind of leaning toward, is simply the title piece, The Grieving Heart. So I'll let you pick.
I think I want to blink.
Ooh, nice. That is one of my all-time favorites. Thank you. But then somehow you knew that, didn't you? And so for this, I must put the eyeglasses on.
Well, I know.
Mm-hmm. In the blink of an eye, life unfolds in seconds, literally one moment slipping into the next. We cannot keep time from moving forward, even when we really try. We can't hold on to insidious time. Another limitation of time is the inability to reverse its direction. Despite literary fiction that depict travelers of time, once a moment is spent, like coins in a vending machine, it's gone. Moments in time can be filled with many things, often overwhelming. Other moments, void of everything except the steady drum of its own marching cadence. We all promise to cherish the time we enjoy with loved ones. Hopefully, those moments are plentiful. Still, one day, out of the blue, in the blink of an eye, time is up. And what often follows is tremendous sadness. Initially, it will feel inescapable. Yet time is steadily moving forward. Remember only the love. Forget everything else. We only have time to spare on loving, because in that blink, nothing else really matters.
You know, Brazen, what I got from that was that you have to pace yourself. Everything you do is a syncopated rhythm. It's a dance. You tiptoe, sometime you cha-cha, sometime you rumble, sometime you run, you know, but you have to keep time, and you have to understand that yesterday was a gift, this moment is a gift, and tomorrow is not promised. You know, we live moment by moment. People say, oh, you know, what I'm going to do tomorrow. You can't plan for tomorrow. You have to live in this second. Just like she said, in a blink of an eye, people are taken away. I had a couple friends that, you know, just went to lunch with her husband. He was carrying in some tables to set up for a repast for her brother. And he dropped in. Husband. You know, it's crazy. I let my little dog out. He'd been out in the backyard for 13 years. There's no way for him to get out. The coyotes jumped over the fence, kidnapped him, and ate him. I'm devastated. But let me tell you about the joy of the transition. Mm-hmm. My mother was here, and I was so thankful that God let her die here in my home. I felt her last heartbeat. I saw literally her soul separate from her body. And when I looked at that shell, I couldn't cry. And her sweet effervescence, I can still smell her perfume. I have this thing about, you know, wearing her slippers. And she gave me these little slippers. She said, you work so hard on that computer. She gave me these little finger slippers. And I feel
never like seen finger slippers.
They are so cute. I love them. So I understand what you're saying. And that was a very, very powerful piece. And I love the way that you orated it. Poetry is very subjective. It's like art. Mm-hmm. Ebbs and flows. You know, you have to have a good voice inflection, and you allow people into your soul. So I'm going to allow you into my soul. I'm going to read you one of my poems. What do you think?
Oh, please do.
Okay. This one is called Student for Life. Yes, that's right. I'm a student for life. To heaven's gate, I hope to gain admission because daily I pay installments on my tuition. I'm studying ESP, technology, love, chemistry, sociology, humanity, long-suffering, psychology, dysfunction, chemical dependency, and I'm majoring in economic poverty. I'm majoring also in astrology. I'm just trying to figure out who it is I really want to be. This course load is heavy, but until my journey is complete, I will not receive a PhD or an undergrad's degree. See, my teacher, Jesus, he has to teach me, grade me, save me, raise me. I hope and pray that I pass with at least a C. I want to prove myself worthy, give back to the community, and set my soul free. Thank you. So do you go out and do spoken word poetry at venues?
Yes. Well, let's just say I was just starting to get that ball rolling when the lockdown hit. Mm-hmm. So I was at a friend's restaurant, coffee shop, and I was at a local library, and I am just now starting to reach out again as things are just slowly opening up again.
That's what,
because there's something about physical versus virtual. Virtual is lovely, and thank goodness we have it. But there's
on that, and I mean that, you know, I don't mean it literally, but figuratively. But what charge do you get when the audience does the finger snaps and the hand claps and the mm-hmms and the nods of the head? How does that make you feel?
Well, we are energy. You when you mentioned being there as witness, bearing witness to your mother's transition, and you said it, you summed it up, the shell, looking at the shell. You know, we roam around in these glorious meat suits.
And I love that, the meat suit.
I love how, you know, irreverent it is. We roll around in these glorious meat suits.
Yep.
And at age 61, I've reconnected with mine. So now I'm mind, body, soul. That's part of the whole food journey and everything else. But, you know, at the end of the day, we are pure energy contained within these meat suits. And so what the virtual world does not do as well, not that it doesn't do it at all, because I've my heart space open up when we were in the green room with your gift. It is achievable, but it's much more difficult,
right?
I think. Right. And my first absolute passion is theater and live theater, or on the boards, as I like to call it, make reference to it versus a screen. And there's, you know, great things with that. But the stage is the fourth wall. You may have heard that reference as well. But you feel that energy. That's also why inevitably the Saturday night crowd tends to be, you know, more effervescent than the Friday night crowd, because right. Friday night people were rushing from the office to get there, and maybe they had a cocktail.
But then too, the poetry scene, they smoked them some weed and had them some tea, so they cool now. They they're ready to jump right into
now.
They're just chilling.
But it is that energy. We're connected.
It's that charge, you know, because what happens to me is I used to do great events. We had a whole bunch of speakeasies here. I have a percussionist sometimes that works with me. Sometimes I have a guitarist that really kind of puts a little extra Spengali on it. And when I see someone connect, or when I see a tear, or when someone comes up with me and they goes, wow, you know, I was feeling you and, you know, your words, it is a true gift to be able to be a wordsmith, put those words into play, and then to take action. People will think about that. So I do a poem called It. And when I go, oh, you know, when you do It, you know, that's my signature poem. And people just absolutely love it. They go crazy because they go, I feel it. I feel I want to know what my It is. So it's really a gift to be able to be a creative. My daughter is in theater. And I was worried about her, Deb, girl. At first, I was like, oh, Lord. because she was out there. She was in the anime and she was in the LARPing and she was in the Comic-Con. And I was like, you live in this fantasy world, you know, how are you going to earn a living? And look at her now. She's sought after here in San Diego. She's got huge requests for her now going to New York and to Los Angeles because she's a makeup artist and costume designer. My husband taught her how to sew. Girl, I can't sew. He taught her how to sew. And she,
I can do a button.
Yeah, I know. She transformed herself into all of these things, but I stepped back and I allowed her to be who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And so many parents or, you know, people in transition or family members want to remold you, want to reshape instead of just really kind of letting you be who you are. Sure, right. You want to give some direction. You want to give some support. Mm-hmm. Also allow a person to be free because it's not your journey. You walk the walk and they're going to walk their walk. Simple as that. But let's walk to the kitchen now.
As we stroll to, I do just want to make one more link as far as I consider this to be a silent companion.
Mm.
It's there when you need it. Night, day. I've had people who were kind enough to let me know they carry it with them. The other one, the journal, allows some free pages for you to jot some things down. But, you know, there are so many ways. Grief is universal, and yet it is as unique as your fingerprint.
Absolutely.
And it's not my calling to, in any way, shape, or form, try and instruct someone how to grieve. You know, my personal philosophy on that is, if you're not doing serious damage to yourself or anyone else, sky's the limit. And in fact, I encourage people, and that's what, you know, going and speaking and sharing the poetry and having that space, having that flow of energy just all interchanged and bundled together and leaching out and everything else, is to just let people know they're not alone. That, you know, I want people to embrace the discomfort for the purpose of working through it.
Right. But understand, the person that is transcending is grieving too, because they are going through something unknown. Tell you a quick story. Then we're going back to the kitchen. Dr. Cornel West, you know who he is?
I do not.
Okay. Well, I'll turn you on to him, honey. He is. He's amazing. He's a friend of mine, and he calls me Sister April. He calls everybody sister or brother.
Mm-hmm.
He says, Sister April, you know, the world is cruel, because when you enter into it, you come into it, into a place between urination and defecation in a puddle of slime and blood. And I'm like, wow, what a visual. He goes, but once you arrive, they've thrown a party for you. You've got new clothes, you've got new toys, you've got bright lights, everybody's hugging and kissing, they're so happy to see you, they're so excited. He said, and then you go through this thing called life, and you're going to have some bumps and bruises, and then you got to make another transition. Some people are going to be forced out. Some people are going to be killed. Some people are going to be kicked out. He says, but know that when you get through that portal, that there's another party waiting for you. There's other people that are there. Oh, there are other people there that are there to greet you, that are happy to see you, that have missed you. He says, and you're going to go through another bright light. He says, so fret not, Sister April. There's another party. That did something to my heart that I will never, ever forget. It was so comforting to know that, again, there's another party. There's somebody waiting to greet you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't know what to expect.
My sincere belief is, I'm a student of physics, specifically energy cannot be created nor destroyed. It can only change form.
That's right.
And my poet's heart, my interpretation of that is that when we shirk the mortal coil, when we leave that shell, when we exit the meat suit, our essence, what makes each of us, our essence remains intact. We rejoin, we reconnect. And I was talking to a neighbor just the other day, and I said, if you really embrace that concept, and this is again a focal point of speaking engagements for me, mm-hmm. will be as we open up. And that is, if you genuinely accept that as truth, and truth is very subjective. You know, my truth may not be your truth, and so on and so forth. But for those who might be struggling with the grieving process, if you do accept that, then know that the pain you feel is because we pinch ourselves off and we look back where the meat suit used to be, and we miss them because we are tactile, satient beings. And that's understandable. That's why I want people to embrace it. You know, cry, scream, get it out, do what you need to do. It sucks when someone that you love dearly transitions out of that glorious meat suit, and we miss them horribly.
We do.
But when you set with it,
you look at the quality of life versus the quantity of life. Mm-hmm. I asked my mother, you know, she passed at 91. Mm-hmm. And I said, Mama, how does it feel to be in your 90s? She says, it's the pits. She said, I'm tired of being poked and prodded and given nasty medicine, eating food I don't want to eat, not knowing when I have to go to the bathroom, not all that. She said, the greatest thing that's left on this planet is to watch Andy Griffin, listen to some country music, and get a hug and a kiss from you. And, you know, that was her greatest joy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Brain, sometimes you have to look at this and you have to say, do you want this person here uncomfortable, unhappy forever?
Right.
Or are you bold enough to allow them and give them permission to go? Mm-hmm. That's what I did with my mother. I gave her permission to go. She gave me permission to stay. And it was going to be all right. And she says, I'm just with you, like you said, in another form. And I feel her so many times. I can hear her, you know, songs, you know, the butterflies in my garden. I mm-hmm. ask her too. So let me ask you some fun questions, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So if you were an appliance in the kitchen, what appliance would you be and why?
Ooh, I am going to go with my brand new Vitamix. I guess that's a plug to Vitamix because it will take so many things and transform them into other delicious things.
Right.
It'll take those whole food plants and turn them into creamy, yummy, delicious sauces and gooey gooey.
They can make cool goodness. Things, so they can make hot things.
Correct. Correct.
I think I'd be the spice grinder.
Ooh.
Yeah, I like
Tell me spice girl.
Yeah, I like to, you know, I like to chop it up. I like it to taste good. I want it to be spicy. So
nice. Well,
if you were an animal, what animal mm-hmm. would it be and why?
Otter.
An otter.
I've always been an otter.
I love otters too.
I love the water. They're cute, adorable. They like to play.
They do.
They adore playing. And they also they think they like sea otters will dive down and get a rock, and they'll get their mussel or their oyster, and they'll smack it to crack the shell. So they use tools. So they're clever and they're adorable. And I would absolutely be an otter.
We saw a lot of them when we took our cruise to Alaska, and their fur is like mink. It's mm-hmm. unbelievable. It's unbelievable. When you come back in a different form, in a different form of energy, how do you want to be recognized? So would you be a flower? Would you be an animal? Would you be the breeze? What would you be?
I would be whatever touches the person's soul who's remembering me. And it would be the face of a flower. It would be the warm kiss of a breeze.
What do you want your legacy to be, Deb?
That I helped people to embrace and foster self-soothing. Because the, as far as I'm concerned, death is not to be feared.
Right.
We don't die. We, the meat suit has a expiry date. They all do. It is all part of the cycle. But I think if people genuinely allow themselves, and I'm not talking religions or anything else. That's why I tend to quote physics with regard to, you know, energy cannot be created, destroyed. It can only change form. And I've got nothing against religions. You know, they do beautiful, wonderful things. But again, just like I am no one to tell you how to grieve, I'm not going to tell you how to worship. So at the end of the day, it comes down to energy and it doesn't go away. And what I, through all my years and my studies, and I did study world religions at Edgewood College, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, it is that energy that continues, and therefore our essence, whatever our essence, and you can call it your spirit, your soul, your essence, and that lives on. And if we genuinely allow ourselves to embrace that concept, what is there to fear? It's uncomfortable when we are separated from the meat suit of a loved one. Mm-hmm. But even then, as you pointed out, when we can quiet our minds and open our heart space, we can feel them because they're there. Mom's there. Mm-hmm. Mine joins me in the kitchen as I recreate her, the favorite recipes in my whole food plant-based. She had the best baked beans. I mean, people would come from miles around, counties. She was part of the ladies' home auxiliary for the hospital, the hospital auxiliary.
Oh, wow.
And you know, they had a couple big functions each year, and she would make the giant Nesco roaster full of baked beans, and they'd be sold out by 10:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And you know, so she was well known for this. And I was in the kitchen. You mentioned going into the kitchen. I was in the kitchen and I had just embraced for myself, for my personal reasons. I don't care what you eat. I just know what I choose. And I grew up eating meat. I will say that I boycott factory farming. So, and that's left me where I'm at, and I'm eating more variety food than I ever did before.
And I
still love a good steakhouse, but that said, I was in the kitchen and I was literally, now I would only make the beans once or twice a year, maybe. And this particular day, April, I'm in the kitchen and I was in the zone. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I'm dumping, I'm pouring, I'm tasting, I'm thising, I'm thatting. And it's like, you got this, Mom. Mm. I'm just your hands, and she never measured anyway. So it was like, we were having a good old time. And this was last year. She passed in 2008,
Tell me a little bit about this plant-based diet that you are on, so that I get a better understanding. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many different options. People call them so many different things. You've got pescatarians, which I would probably be because I love fish and seafood, but there's a lot of cholesterol there. You've got vegetarians, you've got vegans, you've got, people that are carnivorous, that love to eat meat. Mm-hmm. What is a plant-based diet versus, I don't like to call them diets. I like to call them livets.
It is my lifestyle. And it all began a year and a half ago. I mean, it's still fairly new for me. And I was watching Dr. Michael Greger. He produced a documentary on the Curiosity Channel, and it was called Prescription Nutrition. So that is what kicked me off on my path. I'd always loved my veggies, but I also would have described myself as a carnivore. Dad was a rat pack kind of guy. He was a part owner in a supper club. So I still love the vibe as far as that goes. And at my core, I would say that we're pretty much omnivore, but I also, through my recent studies this past year, feel like we're primarily designed, our gut bacteria, everything else, to be primarily herbivore. Mm-hmm. Now, you could call that vegan. Vegan carries a lot of baggage with it, but it doesn't have to. The whole food plant-based.
When you say vegan, it's not even just the food. It's the whole philosophy around, supporting animals.
Correct.
And great vegan restaurants. When I tried to cook it, it tastes like straw. But, and I totally understand, a plant-based diet.
Yes.
When my mother was transitioning, I started watching what she mm-hmm. extracted from her diet because she's preparing the body. Mm-hmm. And meat was one of them. Mm-hmm. She didn't like beef anymore. Mm-hmm. She would eat some fish. She didn't like the smell of chicken. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't eat, bacon. Mm-hmm. There were certain things, vegetables, the textures of certain food. She mm-hmm. So as the body is transitioning, and sure. luckily for you, and I'm catching on, you got it ahead of time that you are preparing the body to continue this live it and not a diet.
Correct. Correct. And yeah, I don't watch serving sizes, anything else. I just make sure to mix things up, to eat the rainbow. And again, my journey began, for anyone who is hearing this and curious, I highly recommend checking out Dr. Michael Greger. He also has nutritionfacts.org. He is a medical doctor. You can find him online, get any question you could conceivably have answered. And that's led me on to other people, other books, the China study, and so on and so forth. And it's all explaining about the whole food plant-based. And there's a gazillion amazing chefs and things online on YouTube. I have like 500 videos saved. I'll never get around to cooking all of them. Wow. But again, as I mentioned, I'm eating more interesting variety of food than I ever did before. I was limited Taco Tuesday, prime rib Saturday, blah, blah, blah. And at the end of it all, it's like I eat more delicious variety. And also, there's never been a better time that while I focus on eating the actual pieces of fruit, eat the apple, eat the banana, eat the grapes.
Right. And let it lay on your
palate. Don't drink the juice.
Right.
Yeah. Huh?
Let it lay on your palate.
Yes, yes, yes. And enjoy it.
Enjoy what a bitter is. Enjoy what a sour is. Enjoy
yes,
what a natural exactly. sugar is.
Well,
and become one with your food and have, because eating is a meditation.
It is.
One of my guests asked me, she said, so are you eating for entertainment? And sometimes you are. You're just popping stuff in your mouth. You're just consuming it because mm-hmm. it's there, because you have nothing else to do. And that, we need to eat to live. We don't need to live to eat.
Right. Well, there's also nothing wrong, as you also mentioned, with thoroughly, having that food event. That's what the holidays are all about, food events and elevating the food to, to this, art form, and enjoying the look, the feel, the taste, the texture. But Eckhart Tolle, I was just reading Stillness.
You read him? Girl, good, bravo for you.
Love him.
I have to listen to it. I can't read it. I get lost in the vernacular. His lexicon is amazing.
Stillness Speaks is the book, and it's in digestible little bits.
Okay. All right.
So I think that one might be easier to read than one of his more recent novels. But this one is Stillness Speaks. It's more poetic. And in fact, he said, with reference to allowing yourself to be bored. And a lot of times if we're bored, our mind, you know, feels like we shouldn't be, and it will literally translate that sometimes into a hunger that we actually satiate with food.
Right.
And he's talking about okay with being bored.
Right. But it's the hunger of the soul. What are you really hungry for?
Right. And that if you sit with your stillness and just get past that little bit of discomfort, kind of like I'm asking people with grieving, lean into the discomfort to get through it. We spend more time and energy avoiding the things that we're afraid of.
That's crazy.
Than if we just ripped the Band-Aid off and moved on.
I know. Well, you have ripped off the Band-Aid. You've exposed the scar, but now you are also healing it. Thank you so much for your beautiful reading of your poetry. Thank you for your words of wisdom and encouragement. I'm going to look at that plate one more time. I have a conversation with my plate. When I make my plate, I'm playing, you know, okay, look, we need to get, you know, not so much white stuff. Let's get a little bit more color here. Let's do some eggplant. Let's do some different type of stuff. Experiment with it. Thank you so
much
for experimenting with our heart, Deb. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you, how to purchase a copy of the book and the journal, and, you know, to tune on to you if they're in Wisconsin or if you're doing a road trip, just how they can follow you to get in touch with your poetry.
The best way for all of the above is to just go onto my website, debrossman.com. That is debrossman.com. It'll have all the links to buy the books, because my books are on every conceivable global online venue possible. And it'll let you know where I'm speaking and all the fun stuff that I'm doing.
Well, you're doing some amazing stuff. Brains, I need you to go in and do your due diligence right here on the edge. I need you to love, like, and share. What? Love, like, and share. One more time. Love, like, and share. Leave a comment, you know, because that's how we grow. That's how we evolve. Is there anything that you want to know about grieving? Do you need assistance with grieving? Do you need coaching? Do you need a good book to read while you're on the throne or not on the throne? Maybe you're bored and you want to explore something and open up your mind. Maybe you need a journal so that you can write down your thoughts and your processes and go back and look at where you were and write down where you aspire to be. All of those things you can find with Deb Rossman, and you can find them here on The Edge. Thank you so much, Queen. I appreciate you being here with me today. You've been a joy.
Much love and light to you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for inviting me into your heart space.
Absolutely.
I am so honored. I am so humbled. Thank you.
You're the best. Grange, you're the best too. We're counting on you.